This is the Accounting Influencers Podcast
with Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.
And thank you to our special sponsors, Iris Software, iris.co.uk. Martin, you saw a great video just recently from Iris, didn't you?
Yeah, what I think people don't understand about Iris is they were ahead of the game for MTD Phase 1 because they were the first software vendor to be listed as approved by the HMRC for MTD filing. And guess what? They're fully prepared for the next. So they've got an MTD webinar on demand that you can catch up with at any time. Rob, where do they go to see this?
It's iris.co.uk/MTD webinar. That stands for Making Tax Digital for our international listeners. And there's some great stuff there that you need to know to guide you through the whole Making Tax Digital initiative. So iris.co.uk/MTD webinar. Right, Martin?
That's right. So wherever you are in your journey, Iris know that they have the knowledge and tools to help you in the next steps. That's iris.co.uk/MTD webinar.
So in this week's Action Pack Show, we've got some more exciting things for you. There is so much to talk about. We start with the news, Martin.
We start with the news and we follow on from last week as well. And we talk about this global talent shortage in the accounting profession. Why are we struggling to recruit? What about the firms who don't struggle to recruit? What do they do differently? And how can you fix it in your firm?
In our special guest interview, I get to somebody you've known a long time, Martin, Mr. Carl Reeder. Tell us about Carl Reeder.
Carl is eponymous, I would say. That's the word that comes to mind. You say Carl Reeder and the rest of it does itself. Is he a best-selling author? Yes, he is. Is he the voice of small business? And for many people, yes, he is. Has he spoken at political party conferences? Yes, he has. Has he written for the major broadsheets? Yes, he has.
This week, he's speaking on behalf of one of our newest partners, Practice Ignition. He's an influencer for them. He's head of the accountancy division there. And they are bringing Carl in because he's got such a voice in the profession and the business community that profession serves. So we're talking about his role in Practice Ignition and how it's changed his practice, because of all the other things he does, he owns an accounting practice, doesn't he, Martin?
Yeah, and he is, as a result of that, the voice of the practitioner, which is why PI have got him on a retainer, because he knows what a practitioner goes through. He knows what it is to build a firm and a brand. He knows what it is to see success. He knows what it is to increase prices. All of the journeys that we typically struggle on in practice are ones he's been through. So have a good listen to this one.
Yep, and you'll get the highlights if you listen to this show on the Monday and the highlights on a standalone episode on a Wednesday. And if you want the full deep dive and cut version, then tune in on Saturday. You can get it as a bonus issue there. And then we've got a very interesting Here's What Works section, Martin.
We're keeping it themed for you here, guys. So we're looking at mine and Rob's careers in consultancy, and we looked at what is working and has worked consistently for firms who want to retain their top talent. What happens when you can't pay what the big city firm can pay? What happens when you perhaps haven't got as nice a premises or the same technology?
And we know for sure, Martin, don't we, what happens if firms don't take this issue seriously, because they'll become irrelevant, they'll die on the vine, as it were, because without that talent to drive your growth and recovery, you cease to be a player.
They become very expensive accountants because the partners end up doing the work.
And finally, our special expert interview today is with a practitioner. We don't always do this, but we do get some people that are practitioners and influencers like Carl Reed and Will Farnell that we've had on the show. And I had the privilege to interview a wonderful gent called Corey Tallone. You go back a long way with Corey, don't you, Martin?
I do indeed. And it's lovely, again, from a listener point of view, on the expert interview section, to give you a practitioner who's walked the talk. You know, often we give you the gurus, the consultants, and the experts in that sense. Here's someone from a practitioner point of view who made a massive career decision at a fairly young age to get out of big practice and to go and start from scratch again, and what a success he's made of it.
That's what we've got lined up for you on this show. Should we get started, Martin?
Let's get stuck in.
The Accounting Influencers Podcast.
Cutting through the crap to bring you the very best interviews, insights, and wisdom.
From the planet's most influential people in the accounting and fintech world. The Accounting Influencers Podcast.
So it's our weekly news section, and you may recall if you listen to the show, you're a regular listener, we talked last week about the crippling talent shortage and the big black hole in the accounting profession, where there's just not enough talent around, Martin, to help them grow their firms. So it leads us to the question, why have we got this problem, and why are so many professionals either not coming into accounting or leaving accounting? What's going on?
It's boring, that's why. As our good friend and colleague Dan Richards says, there's nothing new under the sun. And this is not a new problem. This is not the first time the profession has faced a talent shortage. This is not the first time that they've seen people leave the profession and go into not even accounting in industry, but out of accounting altogether. This isn't a new thing. The question is, why is it happening? Why does it keep happening? And I think it's in the news right now. It's about this time of year as well that we seem to get it in the news each time as well. But I think if we look from a mid-tier perspective, first of all, okay, mid-tier perspective, where you've got a seven-figure firm, where it's grown typically by referral, where team members are ultimately seen as worker ants, and the partners are there, all running their own separate, you know, silos under a common brand. I'm audit and I'm not letting that tax partner anywhere near my clients, that sort of thing. Now, in a scenario, which is a common scenario like that, there isn't thought and conversation around career path, around employee recognition, around retention of talent, around development of talent. And there'll be some firms now listening to this screaming, saying, it's different in our firm, we always look after our staff. Yeah, no, you don't. So on that basis, I've got to go with generalities, Rob. And the general position I see is that zero investment is made, not financially, but emotionally, in keeping people and making them want to buy into the brand of the firm, making them want to buy into the vision of the firm, making them want to tell stories about how they've helped their clients, showing them their career path, how far they can go, how much they can earn. All of these things are not part of the team member conversation. And to quote biblical scripture at you, and there's a departure for this podcast, where there is no vision, the people perish, I think, or something along those lines.
Yeah, it's in Isaiah, I believe. Yeah, you're right.
Very impressive, very impressive. So on that basis, there's no vision. So the team member, the senior manager goes, so I'm coming to work. Why exactly? You know, what else is out there? And the harsh reality is there are companies that are a lot more keener to get that person on board than the accounting firm is.
We know that with compliance and automation and digital and cloud, there's less work needs doing by accountants, but there are more businesses starting every single day. So we still need them. We're still going to need that labor pool, if you like. Accounting firms are going to have to shore up this black hole in one way or another, else they won't grow.
There's an argument here. There's an argument over, first of all, the talent pool or labor pool decreasing. The question is where, because in areas like India, it's exploding.
But that brings us to an offshoring or outsourcing solution, doesn't it?
Absolutely right. And in terms of, do we need it? Because there's always businesses starting, so we need accountants, so where are they? There's also a conversation there around technology as well. And can technology do the job of an average accounting junior, for example, of an AAT level 4, for example? So this is the... I don't think that this is specifically the conversation. It's how do you keep somebody in the profession when they're looking elsewhere? And they're looking elsewhere because they're not bought into what they're doing. They're not emotionally bought into what they're doing. And I think we will continue to see this item in the news because we'll continue to see firms not spend enough time on developing their teams.
But is it the fault of the accounting firm and that leadership and that culture? Is it the fault of the profession itself, the associations, the institutes, the regulatory bodies that are not selling accounting as a great, exciting career to get into, because graduates are thinking, I'm going to get chained to a desk for 10 to 15 years and I'm going elsewhere.
For me, it's about commerciality. Look, if you went through the training, you decided you wanted a career in this one way or another, you joined a firm. The firm either looks after you or it doesn't. It's no different to any other organization, any other employee, except that perhaps because of the level of qualification that's required to become an accountant, there's far more invested by the individual in becoming an accountant in practice. So for me, it's about the firm. How does the firm nurture, cuddle, develop, and reward its team? Because in a, as you say, talent shortage scenario, then the need to do that is great.
But that would explain why an accounting professional might leave a firm, but it wouldn't explain why they would leave the profession.
Can you imagine the cell? I'd like to sit in a cubicle and account for my time in 6-minute increments. Not a huge cell, you know? So is accountancy attractive to somebody perhaps who is numbers orientated? But there are so many different options for somebody who's numbers orientated, especially in tech and in fintech as well. So for me, when we talk about recruitment of new talent, then yes, we do shift the attention to those offering the training courses, to the institutes, to the associations. Yes, we do. When it's retention of existing qualified talent, for me, it's down to the firm. It's down to the firm, the employer, to make them want to be part of their organization, to make them want to contribute their talent towards the organization. So two different camps on that
one. Sure, and this will go on and on. But let me ask you this, Martin. If we look at the options for accountants, and there are a lot of introverts out there that love being an accountant and love crunching the numbers and everything else, but when they graduate with an accounting degree, is it more attractive to go into practice or to go into industry or to go into something else altogether and start something themselves?
Yeah, I mean, there are all kinds of options. I like the Will Farnell definition of there are accounting practices and accounting businesses. Accounting practices are typically where the managing partner's got a job working for himself and then out farms out the work he doesn't want to do or he can't do to other staff members. An accounting business is an empire. It's an entrepreneurial commercial structure. It has marketing and business development functions in it, and it's designed to grow. It's designed to provide new value. I think the more accounting businesses we have out there, the more we'll attract graduates into practice. But we know that the big four cast a huge net over the graduate intake each year and then spit them all out, and that's what everyone else feeds off after that. So there is still that element as well. For me, it's commercial. It's about giving a proposition to a talented individual that makes them come to you and not your competition.
Brilliant. I'm looking forward to your Here's What Works section when we look at what works on retaining your best talent in accounting firms. So that's been great, Martin. Thanks for the news.
Improve your practice while decreasing how hard you work to make your firm really fly. Really fly.
The Accounting Influencers Podcast
with Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.
Hi, and welcome to our special guest interview for this week, which is the legend that is Carl Reeder. Good day, Carl.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
Wonderful, Carl. Lovely to have you on the show with us. You're an old friend of the show. I've known you a long time. You have your finger in a lot of pies, but one of the most recent ones after the success of your book, Boss It, has been your alliance with Practice Ignition. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how that came about?
Yeah, sure. So I've known of Practice Ignition as a company for years. In fact, you know, I got to know them in their very early days when they first came over to the UK. So I've been in and around the ecosystem and knew about them as a business. But in truth, Rob, if I can be very honest with you, in the early days, I didn't really know what they did.
They did struggle with that. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So, you know, we run a multi-million, multi-award-winning practice, and we looked at the product very superficially and didn't see how it would fit in. So, yeah, that was going back, I don't know, 6, maybe even 8 years. Along the way, we were quite fast growing. So we specialized in the franchising space. And one of our challenges as a business was the integration of our business development, so sales and marketing, through to our operations, through ultimately to pounds, shillings and pence in the bank. And we knew it was a pain point. We didn't quite know where it was. So we started by actually, we started professionalizing this by using a competitor's product. I don't know if I should say that, but we were using another proposal package. And the reason that we used it was quite simply because that was the butt of the industry. That was what people were saying we should use. But it didn't really fix the issues that we had. You see, with where our business was, we didn't need templated proposals. Because, quite frankly, we could afford a designer to do it for us. We had our own proposals and so on. We knew that something needed fixing, but we didn't really know what. And there was a light bulb moment, Rob. The light bulb moment for me, I sat in a demo, and there was a really simple bit of functionality that was so obvious to me with my deep-rooted accounting trainings. Now, I've not been on the tools for years, but I knew that the fact that we could integrate the payment processing with the acceptance of the client saying yes, that integration solved us a problem that was probably a person and a half of admin time, so on and so forth. It was the real light bulb moment.
We'll talk a little bit more about the story, but you are an influencer for many brands, not just in the accounting fintech world, but outside that to serve the small business community. So what kind of questions do you ask yourself in aligning your brand with another company's brand?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, Rob. So I've worked with American Express, Vodafone Business, Mercedes-Benz, you know, some real heavy-hitting brands. And it's been an honour to be asked by them to help represent them. But there's a few questions that I ask myself. The first one is, am I a customer of theirs or would I be a customer of theirs? Would I take money from my own pocket and pay for it? Like I do with Practice Ignition, like I do with American Express. Yeah, they charge me an extortionate amount for my platinum card. However, it lets me go through security. It lets me sit in the lounges and so on. So the value is worth it for me. Like Mercedes-Benz, you know, I was driving a Mercedes, et cetera. So I look for that authenticity, first of all. There has to be that congruence, that genuine belief in the product. Secondly, the brand has to be aligned with my own personal viewpoints, my own personal opinions on the way that things should be done. And yeah, that's a big thing. Most brands have a superficial layer of what they put out there, but the reality is they have to behave in that way too. And then thirdly, they've got to be people that I get on with. And if you can tick all of those boxes, then it tends to work both ways.
So what exactly does Practice Ignition do for those people that haven't come across it?
It creates a seamless customer experience from when you first meet your client right the way through to when they pay you. So it integrates the process of pitching, proposals, payment collection, which is the vital bit, and a single point of truth. And it puts all of those into a dashboard going forward where you can view where your business is going. So the net benefit for us at D&T was actually from two different sides. The first one was that we totally eliminated our debtors and lockup through using the software. Secondly, what does Practice Ignition do? You know, it gives us what I call true practice management, because practice management in the accounting world is often seen to be task planning, workflow planning, capacity planning, if you're lucky, but it's all focused around timesheets and retrospective actions. To me, practice management is, where will our business be in 12 months' time? What will the revenue look like? What cash will be coming in? That allows me to make business decisions for my business rather than for me to know what tax return needs filing. That's the important stuff.
How does it affect the client experience? You've got a really good relationship with your clients. How does it change that, make it better?
One of the disconnects we had was that we were putting ourselves out there as being a modern online firm. I mean, look, Rob, we started doing online accounting back in 2002. Okay. We honestly, you hear of people today saying that they were futurists because they just bought into online accounting. You hear people 10 years who did it 10 years ago saying we were the OGs. We were doing it in 2002. And the reason we were doing it in 2002 was because floppy disks were getting broken in the post. So hopefully that paints a picture of what the landscape was like when we first got into online accounting. But our onboarding experience never quite caught up with it. So we would issue nice presentations and PDF documents, but it would be disjointed because then there'd be emails that were manually typed out and going out. Then there'll be reliance on administrators behind the scenes. And what the software has enabled us to do is, whilst we could do all the stuff ourselves manually, it's wrapped it up into an online shopping cart. So a really good way of thinking about this, perhaps, is a Shopify for services, in that a business can pull it in, so an accounting firm can pull it into their business, just like they would Shopify, and they can sell their stuff seamlessly without having to get involved.
We did a show recently where Martin and I talked about the, and we named names, Carl. We talked about GoProposal and the Sage acquisition and what that meant for the space. And they would claim to play in the Practice Ignition space, but what are the key differences in Practice Ignition and the other players in the space?
I genuinely believe GoProposal and Practice Ignition are two different products. And whilst there is a bit of a crossover in terms of functionality, we've used both. You know, I mentioned that we'd used a competitor. We used GoProposal before. GoProposal is good if you want a systemized menu pricing approach. We saw it more as a pricing tool, which we didn't actually need, because we're firmly of a belief that the best pricing tool is between our two ears. Practice Ignition is a great PDF creator, but then goes on to a payment processor and a practice manager.
Does Practice Ignition stand on its own in what it does, Carl, or does it compete with, say, practice management providers in its offering?
So in my opinion, we've not seen anything like it. We've not seen anything that integrates the payment and the engagement process in the way that Practice Ignition does. And look, to put some flavour onto this, because I know that there were some questions when I've mentioned this before, and people saying that's not an issue for me. But in the nicest possible way, they were taking on one or two clients per month. When you're running a proper accounting firm and taking on 10 to 20 clients, possibly even in a day, we were having to employ someone full time to be constantly on the phone, chasing by email, just to make sure that link from PDF proposal to payment was taking place. That was a really expensive task.
What should accountants be looking for when they want a tool that will do what you're talking about?
The first thing is you need to look for flexibility. You need the tool to be able to work in the way that you want to work. But for example, if you use free option pricing, you want a tool that can do free option pricing. If you want menu pricing, you want a tool that can do menu pricing and so on. So you need to make sure that the flexibility in the tool is not stuck to a single way of doing things. Secondly, you need to make sure that there's the right level of support, the right team members behind it, that the implementation process is robust and that you're going to go through it. And ultimately, that you're going to be paying for a bit of software that you actually use rather than a license that sits on the shelf.
Yeah. And we've got a special link at info.practiceignition.com/AIP for the Accounting Influencers podcast if people want to know more. But Carl, you said you're mouth on the stick. You are always open to conversations with accounting firms. Are you open to people reaching out to you if they want to talk?
Absolutely. So by far the best way to make that initial contact is by social media. That is the easiest place to find me because I spend 24 hours a day, if not 25, sat on social media. So that's the best place to find me. Reach out, connect, start the conversation, because I love getting to know people and love having conversations.
You are a pioneer. You're an early adopter. You're a tech person. What do you feel is coming up in this space over the next few years? If we're having this conversation, say, in 5 years.
Yeah, sure. So I'm honoured that you've called me a tech pioneer. I just know when I see a good thing and I jump on it. The big fear is that compliance is going to be automated. Yeah, that's the big fear in the industry. And I don't believe that that's the case, because whilst it would appear to be a commodity at certain levels, I think customer behaviour, they still like to have a face to speak to. What we're going to see, however, is we're going to see an increase in analytical software that can help streamline, systemize, and regularize the checks and the reviews that accountants do. I think we're going to see artificial intelligence being used to act almost like an always-on advisor. But I do genuinely believe that these tools are going to be offered for the good of the accountant-client relationship rather than to replace the accountant. I genuinely believe that.
Yeah, that's really good. Well, Carl Reeder, brilliant interview today. Thanks so much for your candor, for your passion, and most of all for your insights. That's been great. So in this week's Here's What Works section, another hot topic following on from our news earlier, which is about the state of the accounting profession and talent. So Martin, we are looking at what in this Here's What Works?
We're looking at a question that is probably in the top three most regular that I've been asked over the last 20 odd years. Right, is it what works in retaining talent? So when you're a firm who can't pay what the big city down the road can pay, you know, and when you're a firm who perhaps isn't quite as technologically advanced, you know, or doesn't quite have the same client range mix, how do you retain a superb 29-year-old, a superb 34-year-old, a superb 22-year-old who not only has the qualifications that you need, but is showing initiative, is showing a desire to be proactive? And I get asked over and over again, what works in retaining key talent in that kind of 25 to 40 age bracket? But I know you've got stuff on this as well.
I do, but before we go on to that, talk to us about what happens if you don't proactively retain this talent.
Oh, I think that's the obvious, isn't it? I don't even know if that needs explaining. But ultimately, you get the letter of resignation. Ultimately, people take it upon themselves to find a different home because they've got 8 hours of their day minimum to spend in paid employment. And especially with the current generation, they're in no hurry to waste it in somewhere where they feel they're not getting anywhere.
Yeah, and it's an employee's market, isn't it now, Martin? There's plenty of opportunities for them. If you don't do something for them, they're going to go elsewhere. So yeah, I've got a few thoughts on retaining top talent. I'm sure you have as well. Why don't you start us off on one?
Okay, well, let's start off on the biggie. You go into an accounting firm, Rob, and you go to the partnership, the managing partner or anybody in partner, and ask them this question. Show me demonstrable evidence of the career path that each person in this firm is able to take, okay? And they'll go...
I can hear the tumbleweed going round now, Martin.
Big time, because there isn't one. There is no articulation. And when you get firms who show recruits or existing team members or think they're hitting a glass ceiling, whatever it happens to be, that there's a path for them that's not a time-bound path. Well, after 5 years service, you get this. And after 10 years service, you can have a watch. You know, not like that, but here are the opportunities for you as soon as you prove from a performance and results perspective that you're worthy of it. But it's not time-honored, and accountancy historically has been time-honored. You serve your time. When it's your turn, if your face fits, then you become the next partner if it's your turn. And what has changed and this is in pretty much all the markets we broadcast to, is the top talent wants to see a clear path ahead of them that's maybe 5-10 years ahead, so they can see where they can get to, not in 5-10 years, but where they can get to in 5-10 years if they can run, no matter how fast they can run. So they can get there as soon as they want to, but it will last them that long. So there's no, so we need, and we as the profession, we need firms to articulate and document to their top talent how far they can go based on results and performance level metrics.
Yeah. I'd add to that, to retain top talent, accounting firms need to create a great working environment. Now, we could speak about culture all day, but I'm talking here about the basic things like getting technology in place, because you can't attract top talent with outdated technology and outdated apps and old-fashioned software, legacy software, things like that. So get the right tech in place, hardware and software. But also, when we talk about working environment, Martin, that's as much about what's your model like, hybrid working. Are you letting people work from home? Are you giving them autonomy and flexibility in their working conditions and even in the kind of work that they're doing? That factors in, doesn't it?
Oh, big time, big time. I mean, you're absolutely right. We could talk about culture all day. But it's very, very interesting to me that things that firms struggle with, practice management, workflow, CRM, all go a lot better when there's a strong culture, when people want to be involved. So the second point I throw in, Rob, there is emotional investment. So again, imagine it. You're 28 years old, you're fully qualified, and you decided that you'd like to spend your entire career sat reconciling client accounts in exchange for some money. And that, that when you get to the end of your career, what will you be remembered for? Precisely nothing. There's a futility to that, and the current generation have worked that out. They don't want to take some money in exchange for some time given to them. They want there to be a bigger reason for being at that firm. KPMG did a fantastic job, a fantastic marketing job, of explaining all the purposes of working with KPMG and the term there, not working for KPMG, working with. Lovely little turn of phrase there. And I want to see more firms do this. I want to see more firms create that, here's your reason for being here beyond your annual salary, beyond paying for your mortgage. Yeah, beyond paying for your mortgage, here's why you're here. Because your involvement, your input, your skill set, your expertise impacts clients' lives positively and profoundly and perpetually. You know, and that switches on a lot of accounting professionals these days.
And I'll add a bit of nuance to that, in that these people coming through want a story to buy into. They want to be part of something bigger than themselves. They want to feel like they've got purposeful, meaningful work. That's the emotional investment we're talking about. Rather than just relying on your brand, it's a privilege to come and work for us. That arrogant stance is going to turn people away.
I would agree with that completely. So let me throw in the third thing then. So the third thing I would then throw in, I would call empowerment. And when you are not the management, not the leadership of the firm, can you bring a new introduction in? If you know of one, are you allowed to bring in a new business introduction? Can you go as far as actually proposing the work? Can you take a client to lunch? Do you have a company expense account? How much can you spend on it? You know, so many accounting professionals in that mid-tier senior management level don't know what the parameters are. They don't know the boundaries. It's never been explained to them. Yes, you can do that, and no, you can't do that. And it leads to this impasse, Rob, where, and this is what started all my Passport to Partnership research years ago. Partners just kept telling me over and over again, oh, you just can't get the talent, Martin. They're just not showing the initiative. Back in our day, we'd actually built the offices in the first 10 days, you know, and all this kind of garbage, which of course they hadn't done. And then you go to these rising stars and say to them, I believe you're completely at a loss. You don't show a single piece of initiative and you have no brain. Is that right? And they go, well, if we were ever communicated to as to what is expected of us or what we're allowed to do, we might have a chance of actually showing that initiative. So there's this complete communication breakdown, this impasse, where partners weren't telling senior managers what's expected of them and senior managers weren't demonstrating the skill set desired by the partners. So on that basis, you've got to empower your team. You've got to say, yes, you can, and no, you can't. You've got to say, why don't you? It would be great if you could. Have a go at this. And give them the opportunities to grow in self-confidence by establishing new skill sets that they didn't qualify in 5-10 years ago.
Further to that, give them responsibility, but also give them the scope to fail and the support once they've failed, because that's how they get stronger. And if I may go on, let me add another one. You're talking about emotional investment in your people. You mentioned their skill development, skill investment in people, in teaching them the skills that they need to build career capital to be more useful for the firm. This is not so much the technical skills and the CPD, the CPE that we talk about, but giving them good training, learning, development, mentoring, coaching opportunities to make them better, accounting professionals, business people, commercial acumen, selling skills, people skills, technological skills, knowing how to do more than turn a computer on and off. If you equip them there, they won't want to leave you because they'll feel so valuable and so valued. That must help retain top talent.
Suffering from overwhelm yet, dear listener? So let's bring this down to a baseline, okay? Think about your career. This is speaking to our listeners. Think about your career and the assistance, support, additional information, backing that you wish you had got and you didn't, the things you had to figure out for yourself or the things you never figured out for yourself and became a skills gap for you and fill it for your team.
Yep. And you people that are coming up through the ranks, take control, get your hands on the steering wheel of your own career and manage up and tell your bosses and leaders and managers what you want to further your career and is going to make you stay at the firm. And if they don't do that, that is your red light. That's your signal to walk. That's been Here's What Works for retaining top talent for accountants. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to the Accounting Influencers podcast, cutting through the crap to bring you the very best interviews, insights, and wisdom
from the planet's most influential people in the accounting and fintech world
with Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.
Well, welcome to our special guest interview. And usually we have vendors on here, software experts, all kind of gurus, coaches, consultants, trainers. But occasionally we get really good accounting practitioners that are on the front line doing it, making a difference with their business clients. And I'm thrilled to invite one of them along to the show today, Corey Talone. Good day to you, sir.
Thank you. Nice being here, Rob.
Corey, for the benefit of people listening that haven't come across you, your firm, give us in 60 seconds what you guys are all about.
We're a firm outside of Philadelphia in the United States. We focus mainly on tax compliance and then advisory services for our individuals and businesses.
And you're a small firm. Would you say you're a nimble firm? That lends itself to agility and adapting to these challenging times, doesn't it?
Yes, we're only about 11 people all in. So being able to make moves quickly through the last year and a half and be flexible with everyone and everyone's needs has been pretty great for everyone included.
Do you plan for global domination? Do you want to be a big firm or is that a good size for you?
I think it's a pretty good size. I came from a larger firm, maybe about 100 people, and the flexibility I have now, I seem to enjoy more. It fits a little bit more and there are less and less of our size firms. So there's a lot of opportunity to, you know, to showcase what we can do.
You're a qualified accountant, obviously. Has the game changed much over the years?
I think so. I think there's been a lot of change in regulation, a lot of change in attitude of accountants and workers in general across all sectors looking for more freedom outside of work, not being tethered to their email. You know, there was a long stretch where email ended up on every device you had, so you feel like you're always in contact. So I think there's a shift back towards getting away from that a little bit, which I think is healthy.
Amen to that, definitely. But that was the promise, wasn't it? That you'd have an exciting career accounting, but you go in and you work for a decent sized firm and they chain you to a desk for 10 or 15 years before you make partner. That was the deal. Accountants are so busy at the moment, but one of the reasons they are so busy is they're taking a lot of the wrong kinds of work, the wrong kind of clients, at the wrong kind of price with the wrong margin. And whose fault is that?
Ours. We're very good at giving advice to our clients, but not always the best at using that same advice we're giving.
Is there a sense, Corey, if you're speaking honestly, that the bigger the firm, the harder it is to offer that?
In some cases, yes. In some cases, no. I have a great relationship where I came from. I think they provide great service. As those firms grow, some of their clients aren't right for them anymore. It's hard to break up with them. So you end up with clients that maybe aren't the right fit for your firm anymore as you've grown, as you've merged, as you've refocused. But everyone's afraid to say, hey, I don't think we're right for you anymore. With a bigger firm, you need bigger clients. The fees are bigger, right? You know, and those opportunities aren't always out there publicly saying, hey, we need this, we need that. So it takes a lot. I would say you really need to be focusing on where you want to be finding those clients and put all your effort there.
In the UK, we have a term switch business, Corey, which is the business that a professional might chase to take them away from another firm, another set of advisors. So what might be the warning signs in a client that is not happy with their accountant that might warrant a conversation with you guys?
You know, the biggest we hear is we can't get a phone call with anyone. We can't get a call back. Right. We give them information and then we get it back you know, a day or two before the deadlines that they need to meet. Now, some of that you have to be careful is maybe they are the procrastinators and they don't want to admit that and they're selling, you know, a false bill of goods. But I think if you have an honest conversation up front, you can get a feel for that. If you set expectations that, yeah, if you give us stuff late, you know, we don't want to work until 2 a.m. That's not what we're in the business to do. So you, if you want to give us stuff late, it's fine. We'll get it done. We'll meet deadlines, but there's going to be extensions involved. And if it really comes down to a crunch time, that could lead to increased fees.
Do you think clients are more predisposed these days to switch providers, to switch advisors? Because it used to be in the day, you had a banker, you had an accountant, you stuck with them for life through hell or high water, good or evil, didn't you?
I think due to the intimate, you know, relationship and financial details you have with the accountant, that's usually the last one to go. As I see, people look for advice for different investment advisors. But as you talk to bankers, investment advisors, they always say, well, they always have to check with their accountant first because they know everything and don't want to do anything without them. So I think people are hesitant to leave their accountant unless they really don't like to, or there's some other reason.
But the key conversation then revolves around what we hear called the gap. It's articulating that difference between where they are now and where they could be by switching over to you guys. How do you have that conversation, Corey?
You know, we talk about what they want, what their plan for the future is, how they want that relationship to go. We don't want to hear from you once a year. We want to be involved during the year. No one likes calling anyone and telling them they owe tax and a substantial amount of it unexpectedly. We want to be proactive. We want to talk.
There's a lot of accountants claim to be proactive and say, we're here when you need us, pick up the phone and call us. But true proactivity surely is picking up the phone and calling them.
Correct. This was a good year to reach out and do some of that.
Yeah.
When the pandemic first started, there were clients I called that I had no business reason to call other than talk to them. And I think that goes a long way, not always calling to say, hey, we need this, that, or the other. Just, hey, how you doing? What can we do for you? Or what do you need? Even if it's just to bend my ear about something, you know, you're talking to people. Some were worried about whether they were going to make it out on the other side, and they don't always want to go home and have that conversation with their spouse, with their parents. They don't want their children to see it. They know they can talk to us. We're going to listen, understand, and hopefully provide good advice, whether it be life or financial.
We've seen some firms, some accountants get it wrong. They're not proactive. They're not having those conversations with clients. Maybe that's complacency, is it? A little bit of laziness, a bit of, we've got monthly recurring fees. We don't have to do that. They'll come to us when they need us. What is going on there?
A lot of it can come back to the, you know, the mix of clients. Accountants, as I said, sometimes are afraid to give up a client, are afraid to fire someone. Accountants get filled up with work that maybe they shouldn't be doing. Maybe the fee's not right for them, but it's that extra fee. You know, Martin talks about it a lot, and there's pricing classes on it and getting the accounting mindset to shift a little bit. But I think a lot of it is, can you provide that for the fees you're charging? And if you can't, those are going to be the first clients that lose that service.
You had to go and mention pricing there, Corey, didn't you? And let's touch on that for a moment. Yes, my co-host, Martin Bissett, he is big on pricing. He delivers some great stuff on that. But it is a touchy subject. Are you a fan of the billable hour, or would you rip that up and burn it with some other things?
I don't think it should be relied on totally. I think there's a lot of work that the value you're giving isn't captured in an hour's time. You know, in our practice, we know what certain things cost when it comes to compliance work. We're upfront. We're not the cheapest around. And I don't want to always track my time for people for 15 minutes and send them a bill each month and all that. And they don't want to get that. We're accountants. We should be pretty good at, you know, business analytics. You know what you can get things in and out of the office for, and how that fits with what you need to run the office, make the amount of money you want, live the life you want. So as long as you're honest with yourself with that, you can be fine and not think about the billable hour.
What do you make of the move by some of the software vendors, Corey, who shall remain nameless, but let's name and shame Jeff Bezos, who's got behind an initiative called Pilot, who said, you know, you don't need your accountant. It's all automated. It's done with the push of a button now. We can do it all for $10 a month, recurring fee. What do you make of things like that that are marginalizing, undermining the role of an accountant?
I think the first, we talked about this in a peer group recently. I think the first to go are clients that maybe shouldn't have been with their accountants anyway, because if you're looking at that option, you're probably not thinking you're getting the advice you want for the money you pay.
Corey, you're still pretty young in the game. What's your plan for global domination or leading the firm or making managing partner, whatever that looks like? How do you plan that out in your head?
Well, hopefully we're going to be positioned to continue what we're doing in, you know, into the next 20, 30, 40 years and beyond. Some of that'll be, you know, the recruitment side of it and navigating those challenges. But I think, you know, if we stick to the message we have about how we want to operate and how we want to serve our clients, that resonates with people, and people want that freedom. And that it is, I don't know the right word here, but people want to feel like they've done something at work, you know.
They want it to count.
Yeah, they're doing good. They're helping someone. That's why I like what I do now more than, say, being an auditor, which I had experience with. You're coming in and looking at the past. Most of those people grind their teeth when they see you because they don't want to, you know, someone coming in and looking over their shoulder. But here we're providing advice, looking at future. How can we set you up to meet your next goal, to buy the next business, to expand your operations, or to set yourself up to retire early, late, however that plan may work out.
And if people want to have a chat to you, Corey, they get your vibe, they want to find out more about Henry Frank & Co., what's a good place for them to reach you?
So our website is www.henryfrank.com. I'm on LinkedIn. You can message me there. It also has a link on the website to email me. I'm happy to have a conversation with pretty much anyone. You know, through this recruiting thing, I've talked to people who weren't sure what they wanted to do. We weren't the right answer, but I was happy to offer an introduction somewhere else if that was right. And if it's a prospective client and we're not the right fit and I know someone that it would be better, I'm happy to offer that as well.
Well, Corey Tolone, that's been a great insight into the life of, well, goodness me, so many things we covered there, but an accounting practitioner on the front line, making a difference, downsizing to have more of an impact and making some big decisions. You've offered so much value today. Thanks so much for your time and your insights.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. It was great. You know, if I can help in the future, happy to.
This is the Accounting Influencers Podcast with Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.
Now, one of the big topics for accountants at the moment is making tax digital. It's going to hit you globally at some point. Martin, our friends at Free Agent have got something to help with here.
Yeah, I mean, if you're an accounting practice, you'll have already had the conversation at some level about how do you get your practice ready to conquer making tax digital? Well, at Free Agent, they've got a 30-minute consultation waiting for you. Each session is designed to help accountants and bookkeepers get their practices ready for the next stages of making tax digital, or MTD. And Free Agent's in-house experts will offer advice on how to segment your client base, choose the right MTD compatible software for your practice and clients, and train and educate the team and clients on the upcoming changes. After your consultation, though, you'll receive a tailored action plan with the next steps for your practice. So Rob, for listeners who want to get that consultation and the tailored report, where do they go?
Go to freeagent.com/AIP for the Accounting Influencers Podcast, freeagent.com/AIP, and they can book that consultation today. So we come to the end of another Accounting Influencers Podcast. Whichever segment you're listening to, this is the wrap-up. And Martin, it's been another action-packed show, hasn't it?
I'd like to thank the listeners at this point, Rob, because, you know, it's 140 countries now. We smashed through the 60,000 download barrier a little while ago, and that's all thanks to you guys. You guys are seeing these adverts for the show on LinkedIn and other platforms. You're coming to take a look, and it looks like you're coming back. It might be that you're telling other people as well. So we want to say a big thank you. But yes, it has been a full show this week. And of course, the theme was really around the talent shortage or perceived talent shortage, depending on your point of view, in the accounting profession.
And this is where you hit us with the news, Martin, around this idea of why are so many professionals not even coming into accounting? Forget the ones that are leaving at the top end. We know we've got an aging profession here, and the baby boomers are edging out of the game. The average age of a partner is coming down, but we need people to succeed though. So what is less attractive about the accounting career than it used to be? And certainly if we're chaining them to a desk for 10 to 15 years, there's no wonder people are not coming into accounting.
Yeah, ultimately, I'm not sure that much has changed and that's the issue. It's not that, you know, it's suddenly become less attractive to qualify as an accountant. It's been pretty much as attractive as it was previously. But other things around have become more attractive, and that's the issue. In that the accounting profession hasn't offered something new. And as team members look for something to hang their hat on and say, this is why I'm with this organization. This is why I choose to spend 8 hours of my life every day here. You know, there hasn't been much more than there was 10 years ago as to why you join an accounting firm or why you don't.
Yeah. And this WWE wrestling meets the accounting profession. We talked to Carl Reeder. He's got the tattoos. He's got the beard. He's got the look. He's got the bulk. And we do a great interview with him this week. He's an influencer of mega proportions, isn't he, Martin?
The only man who tag teams with himself. Yeah, quite incredible. Quite incredible there. But Carl, I think, you know, I described him elsewhere as eponymous, and I stick to that, you know. Carl understands how to build a brand, an organizational brand, but also a personal brand as well, because he's known in both regards. He's known as an expert in his own right. He's known as the leader of an accounting firm that is indeed growing and growing and growing elsewhere. So Carl's got a lot to offer, and I think every listener would do well to listen to what Carl has to say in that section.
And you'll have heard him in the show. He was very candid. He's very forthright. He speaks his mind. He talked about the influence practice Ignition has had on his firm. He's an influencer for them right now, and we thank them as being the newest sponsors of the Accounting Influencers podcast. So that's really worth having a listen to. And then, Martin, we moved on with our theme about here's what works, and what did we hit this week?
Yeah, I really hope the listeners take notice here, because we're not learning our lessons. You know, each cycle of 7 years brings a new economic crisis and a new talent shortage, and we didn't fix it last time, and therefore we had the same problem again. So we talk about talent retention here, and how do we keep our top talent? If we've got a talented 28-year-old, what stops them from moving to another firm? Why do they stay with us? And this is the section where we've got very, very sharp and proven demonstrable tips for you guys. And we want you to go back and listen to that probably a lot more than once and get a good feel for, yeah, all right, there's only three things I've got to do there that I can implement in my practice now, and I'm gonna.
Yeah. If you don't love your talent, somebody else will. They will leave. And it is an employee market. And the labor market's very fluid. And the loyalty that we had years ago, where you would sign up to a firm for life, it's just not there anymore. It's like the world of football or sport or anything else. There's a lot of fluidity. So hang on to your top talent or suffer extinction, obsolescence. What words could we use, Martin? Irrelevance?
We're going to suffer a number of things, mostly operational and mostly increased stress.
And finally, in this week's show, we had a great interview with Corey Talone. He's a man that's been on the cutting edge, and he's a practitioner that you know well, Martin.
Corey's story is one that I like to hear being told as much as possible. Someone who took a career path that we don't see regularly. Someone who had an unusual amount of self-belief, ambition, and drive, and a singularity of vision. Knew what he wanted for himself, went and did it in a way that you don't often hear about. Corey's story is one that personally, I love. I was not involved. I'm not going to say I was involved in it, but I was certainly there spectating as it took place. And he's a humble man, a very generous, spirited man, but he's got a story to tell that's worth listening to.
He does, and he's American by nationality. 40% of our listeners, our many thousands of listeners, come from the USA and Canada. So they relate to that, but all practitioners, and most of our listeners are practitioners, it's good to get perspective from people that are on the coalface doing it, shaping the career, making decisions, making tough decisions in very emotional circumstances that affect the rest of their lives. And Corey's got a terrific story to tell, so you'll have enjoyed that if you've listened to the whole show. So that wraps it up, folks. I'm exhausted, Martin. How are you feeling?
I think it's time to take a little rest, then come back with an action-packed show next week.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on next week's show.